Unlock your Bible. Discover the true meaning of life. Learn the cause of world problems and the astounding solution. Prove for yourself what the future holds. In the Trumpet Literature Library, you will find answers to life's most important questions. Explore these vital titles on Trumpet Bookshelf.
Good morning and welcome to Trumpet Bookshelf. I'm Grant Turgeon. It's been really an eventful week here at headquarters of the Philadelphia Church of God in Edmond, Oklahoma. And we just returned from a really successful personal appearance campaign with Key of David presenter, trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury. That was up there in Portland, Oregon. And we'll be discussing that a bit more on the Behind the Work program on Monday. But today we're covering part five, the fifth and final part of our series about the Ten Commandments booklet. And it just really has been incredible for me to go through this again. It's astounding and sobering in a way how easy it is to forget certain parts of the truth that we study. If we haven't gone over it in a while, it is easy to just forget certain details, certain parts of the spirit of the law, certain applications of these Ten Commandments if we aren't studying these regularly. So today we're covering chapters 9 and 10 of the booklet. And you can get your copy of the booklet for free at thetrumpet.com. Chapter 9 is titled, You Shall Not Bear False Witness. This is from Exodus 20, verse 16. And that's what it says, basically. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. So think about these prior 8 commandments. The first 4 are talking about our most important relationship with our Creator God. Then the last 6 are about our relationships with other human beings. Specifically, commandments 5 through 8 are talking about the physical well-being, especially of other human beings and ourselves. And at this point, commandment number 9 is about human beings' reputations. So this isn't really a physical thing so much. This is a reputation. This is an idea. This is how other people perceive us. The 9th commandment is for safeguarding our reputation and the reputations of others. It forbids all forms of lying, slander, and gossip. And wow, is there a lot of those issues in this world. It's really shocking to see how many lies we're bombarded with on a daily basis. I've just been thinking about all the lies that the mainstream media puts out. And that their job is to safeguard truth, to present the truth in an unbiased manner. Are they doing that? Are they really fulfilling their objective mission? Well, look at President Donald Trump. It's pretty clear that the media hates him with a passion. You can see this by the way that he is presented. For example, with the Charlottesville riots, the media has frequently presented it as if Mr. Trump said there's good people on both sides. So he's talking about the people protesting the neo-Nazis and the neo-Nazis, apparently. But in that quote, Mr. Trump went on to say specifically that he wasn't talking about neo-Nazis at all and that they should always be condemned. So why has the media consistently reported as if Mr. Trump refused to condemn neo-Nazis, when in fact he did it that day, and he's done it many times since? Look at the Christchurch shooting recently. The media reported on the manifesto as if this guy was on the far right, as if he was a Donald Trump supporter. And really, what the manifesto said about President Trump is that this shooter liked President Trump just because he's a white male. Not because of any of his policies. Specifically, the shooter said his political views are actually best represented by China. Do you think of China as a right-wing nation? This shooter was a leftist. And he even said he carried out the shooting to divide America. Has the media played right into that? They have specifically omitted important facts that would basically release the president from any sort of blame. And the obvious point here is the Russia collusion narrative. And I say narrative because it's fake. It's a story that was crafted by the president's political opposition. And last Friday, that was proven to be a complete farce. Why does the media so eagerly report on things that it knows not to be true? Or why does it spread lies and slander and gossip? Why does it report on things without knowing them to be accurate? That is all a form of lying. But of course, it's not just the media. It's not just political officials who lie. Most people, if they're telling you, if they're even going to tell you the truth, would admit that they probably lie multiple times a day. There's this concept that certain lies are fine. You can utter a white lie. You can tell partial truths. You can conveniently leave out crucial details of the story for the better of yourself, to preserve your reputation, and to preserve others from the pain of the whole truth. Probably all of us know from experience, sadly, that it doesn't usually work out that way. It's very easy to get caught in lies. And once the people we lied to find out, they're even more hurt by the fact that we lied than they would have been by the hard truth in the first place. This is a commandment that is all about controlling the tongue. This is what it says here in the Ten Commandments booklet on page 98. And this is just a really good quote here. Though the tongue is the smallest part of the vessel, it has the power to direct its course. So the course of the vessel or the ship, as it talks about in James chapter 3. So the tongue is compared to like the rudder of a ship. You could think of it as the big steering wheel. It determines where the ship goes. And then it says here, all too often the power unleashed by the human tongue is a destructive one. And here it quotes James 3 verses 5 through 6. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire of hell. What a description of a human organ. And obviously it's not just the tongue itself, the physical tongue, that is the problem. It's the fact that the tongue allows us to speak. And sometimes the way we speak reveals some bad things that are in our minds. It can really betray some wrong thoughts that we have. That's why the tongue is so dangerous. It's so easy to think and then say without any filter. It's so easy to put down another person to make ourselves feel better. It's so easy to spread a lie about someone we consider an enemy because we don't like that person. And it's just very easy even just to spread around information that isn't our information to spread. It doesn't always have to be negative information, but sometimes it's just simply not our business to pass it along. All of these different transgressions are covered by the ninth commandment that you shall not bear false witness. Here it says on page 99, no one trusts a known enemy. Our criminal lying shows us that we cannot even trust our elected officials, friends, spouses, business partners, and work associates. That's the problem with accepting lying in society. You can't tell if anyone's telling the truth anymore because it's so rare that you have individuals with the character to make sure that they always tell the truth. One of my favorite TV shows is Survivor. And it really is just a clear look into human nature, because it seems like every episode, the tribe members are lying to each other to try to get the advantage and to make sure that they can blindside someone else and get someone else voted out. And that is really a disgusting thing that they're doing. But it does show you exactly what human nature is all about and how quickly we could just start trampling on other people if we thought it gave us the advantage. Here it says on page 100, to stop lying, We must understand why human beings lie. Study little children. Why do they lie? Generally, little children lie to avoid punishment or to appear better than their peers. With adults, it is not any different. The root cause of this horrible sin is vanity. And then, this is really important. Let's just look at John 8, verse 44. This is a verse we should always think about when the option to lie presents itself. John 8, verse 44. You are of your father the devil, and the lust of your father you will do. This is Christ speaking. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. All lying originates with Satan the devil. Satan invented lying. Lying would not be so common among human beings. In fact, it wouldn't even exist among human beings if Satan hadn't lied to Adam and Eve first. Back at the Garden of Eden, which is covered in the book of Genesis, right there in your Bible, Satan lied to Adam and Eve, or specifically Eve, and Adam just went along with it. He told Eve that she would not die if she took of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And of course, he was leaving out some vital information. Sure, Eve did not die on the spot. She wasn't instantly poisoned by the fruit that she ate. But her sin, her decision there, brought the death penalty on all mankind. And that's why Christ had to die for us. So yes, that tree did cause death, but Satan left out the important details so that Eve didn't really make an informed decision there. That shows you right there how omission of truth is a form of lying. And that doesn't mean you always have to say everything you know. The booklet very wisely brings this out, because some of us, we all know certain things that it would just be rude to divulge to others. It would be rude to tell others every little fault that they have, to try to just critique everyone until they're in the fetal position and sobbing. That would just be wrong. That would be heartless and cruel. It's not right to just try to lord over others and then just spit out whatever comes to mind simply because it's a true statement. Here it says on page 103, and now we're talking about the positive part of fulfilling the ninth commandment. Page 103, in our personal lives, we must make sure that our words are always true. If we remain in the habit of lying to others and to ourselves, we will destroy our character and pervert and twist our own minds. Keeping our minds free of lies opens up an incredible clarity of thinking, the kind of thinking that cultivates deeper understanding of all truth. And then a little bit farther down the page, all men are only as good as their word. If we are habitual liars, none can trust us. What is worse, we cannot be helped spiritually. Who can help a liar? The clearest example of what we mean here is Satan the devil. Not even God can help him. His mind is permanently twisted. So like I said, think about John 8, verse 44. Satan invented lying. He's the father of lying. And we have two choices. The Bible describes God and Jesus Christ as truth. The Bible describes its words, its own words, as truth. And then on the other side of it, you have Satan and the demons. And everything that they are is a lie. Everything that they do, everything that they say is about lying and deception. We have a choice to make of whose example we follow. And finally, chapter 10 of the Ten Commandments booklet, which you can get for yourself for free at thetrumpet.com. Chapter 10 is titled, You Shall Not Covet. Here is where that is stated in the Bible. This is Exodus 20 and verse 17. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is your neighbor's. Notice here how this verse is longer than most of the other commandments. It does just show us how it's very easy to covet or to lust after the things of other people. So the ninth commandment protects people's reputations. And then the tenth commandment is about protecting the possessions of human beings, our own possessions and the possessions of others. So think about the order of the Ten Commandments and how perfect it is. Again, the first four commandments talk about our most important relationship with God. Then the last six talk about our relationships with human beings. The fifth through eighth of those last six specifically are talking about primarily the physical well-being of human beings. Then you get to the ninth commandment, which is talking about preserving people's reputations, which is an idea. And then you get to the tenth commandment, which is talking about preserving people's things or their possessions. Outside of our relationship with God and our relationships with other people, probably we care most about our reputation and then about our things. And that is why the commandments are written in such an order. But look at all these different things you could covet. You could look at your neighbor. You could be jealous of his house, the size and beauty of his house. You could be jealous that he is married. You could be jealous that he has servants working in his house, or that he has a lot of animals or pets, or anything. That the verse, Exodus 20, verse 17, concludes and says, "You shall not covet anything that is your neighbor's." There are a lot of possessions in this world. There are a lot of different things we could lust after. And it says here on page 108, "To yearn or develop an inordinate desire to possess something that belongs to our neighbor is sin. In a similar vein, it is also sin to yearn for or develop an inordinate desire to have goods just like our neighbor. Keeping up with the Joneses is an outward sign of covetousness." So it's wrong to have our minds consumed with thoughts of literally stealing the possessions of others, but even having an obsession with gaining things that are just like other people's as a show of status is also breaking this 10th commandment. If we see that someone has the latest video game console or the largest television imaginable, and we want that for ourselves, and it becomes an obsession, it becomes something that we think about more than even God himself, that's where we are starting to covet and break this 10th commandment. And that's exactly the opposite of the way that God lives. God is the ultimate giver. All he wants to do is give to others and make other people happy. He doesn't care about having things. He possesses the entire universe, and yet he is offering that to human beings who obey him. He doesn't just try to hoard it all for himself. Page 109 brings out a really corrective point. It says, "Those who do not know God or have a shallow relationship with God seek a multitude of possessions. Why? Mostly people do this to mask their deep need for God." That is absolutely right. And if you look around in the world today, the people who are most wealthy, have the most possessions, especially those who openly flaunt those possessions, are almost always the least happy among us. They are seeking fulfillment in this life from their possessions. And yet, no matter how many mansions, no matter how many cars, no matter how many great vacations they accumulate, it doesn't really amount to much. They can't fill the void in their lives. And that's because human beings are made with a need for God. They have a need to have a relationship with God. And no physical thing can replace that need or fill that need. Here's what Luke 12, verse 15 says. "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consists not in the abundance of the things which he possesses." In other words, what you have does not define you. What you own does not make you either a better or a worse human being. Here on page 109 it says, "Although it can be a comfort to have property and wealth, lasting happiness comes from a completely different source. What we accomplish spiritually is all that really matters." So let's not get it twisted here. It's definitely nice to have physical things. It's not wrong to possess nice things, but becoming obsessed with acquisition of wealth that's where it becomes really an idol. That's where it becomes something that takes the place of God at the forefront of our lives. And that's where it becomes a sin. There's really nothing wrong with having nice things, especially if we use those things to give. If we use a nice home to host others and to serve others, if we use some of our time and resources to give to God's work or to just help others out if you see the need, there's really nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with having nice things, but it really is just the mindset behind it that we're looking at. And here it says on page 110, it is more natural for us to covet than to wait upon God to provide our needs. And if you think about all of the conflicts in history, all of the wars and the bloodshed throughout all of history, what is it coming from? Isn't it this covetous spirit? Isn't it because one leader of a nation sees the goods of another nation and wants to take it? Is that not how every conflict really starts? If people were more content with what they had, if they relied on God to provide rather than trying to take things from other people, it seems like we'd have a lot more peace, a lot more contentment and happiness. Ultimately, we must follow Christ's example. John 8 verse 29 says, I do always those things which please him. I do always those things that please him. That is what Christ always tried to do. Notice, it doesn't say there that Christ was looking out for his own gain. He wasn't trying to fulfill his own lusts or his own gratification. He wasn't seeking his own gratification. He was trying to do the things that pleased his Father. He was looking to serve his Father above all. And it's amazing how if we just start to follow that example, all of the physical things come along after that. If we try to obey God and please God first, really the blessings just fall into place. I've seen that a lot in my own life, where the less I'm focused on physical things, it's amazing how I start to have more physical things, probably because I'm spending less money. And then all of a sudden, I'm able to save a lot more. And once I've saved a lot more, well, there is all of a sudden a lot more money for nicer things. But it just really comes down to priorities. Who are we putting first? Or what are we putting first? That's what it comes down to. And hopefully God is at the very head of it. Notice this quote here on page 112 of the Ten Commandments booklet. And this is just about some more depth. Behind these Ten Commandments. If we are breaking the tenth, we are probably also guilty of breaking more than the tenth. In fact, we are most likely guilty of breaking all ten. Besides having an idol in place of the true God, coveting can lead to an idolatrous worship, disrespecting God's name, breaking God's Sabbath and holy days, disobedience to parents and other authority, murder, adultery, and fornication, and lying. We must learn this life and death lesson. We must set our life's goal to obey all of God's commandments. So this is really a subject worth pondering, worth meditating about. The fact that, like I've said before, 10 commandments can really encapsulate every possible human sin. And if we just started obeying these 10 commandments, every conceivable human sin would begin to disappear from our lives. And once the sin is out, that's when we really start to prosper. That's when we really start to live the abundant life. And that's when we really start to obtain true happiness. So today we've given a summary of chapters 9 and 10, which are also the 9th and 10th of the Ten Commandments. And this was from the Ten Commandments booklet, which you can find at thetrumpet.com. It's really been great studying this. I thank you all for listening. This has been Trumpet Bookshelf.
You've been listening to Trumpet Bookshelf. Please
please email your thoughts to comments@kpcg.fm. Listen for new episodes every Friday at 10 a.m. Central Time.